What is happening? Oh, it's time for another episode of Minor Revelations with Drew Drogi. Hello. Oh, my goodness. What is going on? Well, we're having so much fun doing this podcast and doing the show. I just want to thank everybody for listening and for encouraging me to continue, to Jonathan Kornman, who's producing this and just doing an amazing job and pushing me along to go, do this, let's keep this going. To our Patreon subscribers, thank you. Like, you can join our patreon.com/minorrevelationswithdrewdrogi or go on the Patreon app if you want to see video of these episodes and get a bonus episode every month. Please leave a comment in, like, on the Apple Podcasts. Please just, you know, give us a comment. Anything you can do to help us out. We're very small but mighty and having a good time. We appreciate your thoughts. We appreciate your comments and your compliments and sweet things that you're saying. And this is sort of trying to bridge into what I'm going to talk about, which is compliments and giving them and receiving them. And it's something that I think as a creative person, as a Southern person, as a, I don't know what, insecure / needy, look at me actor person, which is, I think actors have such wildly swirling, combative yin and yang of I'm not enough, I'm the best ever, and I have to live somewhere in the middle of all that. It's very hard. It's very hard to navigate. I love supporting people's... I love telling people, like, I love this movie, I love this TV show, I love giving shout-outs to theater that I love. You know, anything like... I want people to see things that are great, and I want to celebrate when things I think are really... when they move me, or they make me laugh, or... make me think or whatever. I like to share that. And sometimes I get a little effusive and I get a little wordy and I think I'm, you know, Pauline Kael or whatever. She was always hateful, but just whoever, you know what I'm talking about. You know, that was, and I give it a review. And I have no credentials to write reviews. Here's the thing. I only talk about what I love. If I was a real reviewer and I went after like things that I hate, because I hate things just as emphatically as I love them, I would just be like, there'd be no way I could work as a creative person. I would only be a critic because I would just be, you can't do both. You can't have it both ways. But I sometimes when I send people compliments and it's written, and the scourge of social media is that you can see when people have read the message and you write a compliment to somebody about their, you know, their play or their TV show or their movie or whatever. And you know them personally and they don't get back to you, but you've seen that they have read it. My mind immediately spirals into, they think I'm being condescending. They think I'm kissing their ass for whatever reason. They think the compliment was backhanded in some way. And sometimes, you know, I can reread it. Especially like when I get stoned later and I go through all my inventory of like, why did you do that? Why did you say that? And that's weird. I look and I go, oh, did that come off really like patronizing? Did it sound like I'm backhanded or whatever? I immediately go into this like, oh, I shouldn't have said all those things. I should have just said, I saw this and I loved it and it was great and I love you and congrats. But sometimes I get really specific. And then I go to places, I go through that a little bit and then I go to, oh my God, go to hell. You can't get back to me. You can't even write. You can't even like the message or write thank you. Because I, you know, and then I go to that. And then I've had to really do the work, whatever, and say, Drew, why are you giving someone a compliment? If you're only giving someone a compliment in order to hear something back, that's fucked up. That's selfish. You should just give the compliment like you're giving someone a gift. You don't bring someone a gift on their birthday and then expect them to give you something out in return. That's currency. That's an exchange. That's not a gift. And you should just leave it, let it go. They might be like getting on a plane and they see the message and they think, oh, that's nice. And they don't get back to you. They might be in the middle of something. They have a life. They are not owed to get back to you right away and say thank you. Because that's my thing. It's like, you can just say thank you and that's all. Then I'm fine. I don't go to this crazy spiral. But I'm trying not to do that because, I mean, 9 times out of 10, I get back to, more than that, I get back to people, whether I know them or not. and say, thank you so much. But, you know, it haunts me the times that I don't. But that's not because I'm such a good person. It's a polite thing that I do. But it's not always like, oh, it doesn't come from a place of like, oh my God, I have to get back to them. Thank you. It's like it's into the woods. Nice is different than good. You know what I mean? It's like I'm being nice, but it's not really good. I don't know. It's very hard for me to sort of wrap my head around people that just see something and they smile and go, that's nice, and they don't reply to you. But I have to realize that they either have that thought, they roll their eyes and say that was a condescending, or most likely they're not thinking about you. They see it, they're busy, they have other stuff going on. So I'm talking this out just in my own sort of way of like, let it go. Send it out in the world with good intentions, and then don't think about it anymore. Get busy with something else. And I don't know, get a hobby. Go like, I don't know, help someone cross the street. Just learn how to make bread. Do something else, Drew. Like, don't feel like you have to obsess over this weird exchange, and it's all about you and what you need. And I'm also learning in like how I receive compliments, and I think because it's like being like a writer and an improv person, I police language. And being a cunt that I am, I will immediately hear something that's intended to be a compliment, and I immediately will spin it into a negative way sometimes. And I have to just start to realize that they meant well. Even if they come up and they think that they're going to be like on your level and say something really bitchy to you because they think that that's how you're going to like them, and they cut the thing, it's awkward. It's weird when someone comes up because they've seen you play an asshole in something and they want to be an asshole to you right away. You know, big picture, they're nervous. They don't want you to shut them down, whatever. Take the compliment and say thank you and smile and move on. I was just with my family, and I took my mom and my aunt to see a friend of who is famous. And my aunt was like really nervous before she met him. And she was like, what am I going to say to him? What am I going to say? I'm so afraid I'm going to say. We had a car, and I'd never really thought about it before. And I was like, look, just say you're a fan, and that's okay to tell someone I'm a fan. It's so nice to meet you. And I said, we're going to see him in a play. Think of one thing while you're watching this play that you really like. And you can just say that. And I said, that is plenty. You don't have to go to the other thing that he's done years before that. You're seeing him live in front of you do something. So compliment that. And it ended up being lovely. And he was amazing and wonderful. And it was a great time. But I forget, like, people are nervous to just say something to someone. And so their knee-jerk reaction. And I myself am nervous to reach out to someone and say, I like your stuff, even if I know them and love them. I don't think I am until I think later and I go, oh, was what I said too much or was it too little? So I guess through all of this, I don't know. It's a big, scary, loud world out there. Send your compliments like gifts. If it's maybe not a gift that they love, who cares? The intention is there, and move on. Move on with your life, right? Oh yeah, let's do it. Hi, guys.
Hi.
How's it going? How are y'all?
Doing good.
Yeah.
Brett, did you just get married or?
I got engaged.
You got engaged. That's awesome. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So are y'all, do y'all have plans to have a day, or is it just like?
We are in the midst of like setting that up and planning that and getting all of that set. Yeah. But none of it's set yet. I'm very excited. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Definitely going to be like a destination type of deal.
Yes.
Oh,
perfect.
Wow.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Putting that pressure on the guests. Good for you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Weed out the filler.
Yeah.
Weed out the filler.
I know there's sometimes can be like, you can have, I don't want to say less people there, but it's like you don't feel like the pressure to invite everybody in LA and have a whole like crazy thing. So it's like, instead it's like,
right, exactly. People get less offended that way when they're,
I mean, is this the right time to say like, am I invited or is this
you definitely are.
We're definitely invited now.
You definitely are. Yeah.
We're doing a podcast. I mean, can't wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's gonna be in this new luxury hotel in Antarctica. It's like $10,000 a night for a room.
That's okay. Great.
I would love if you guys.
I hate my money, so I can't wait to just get rid of it.
It's a mandatory week-long stay.
Okay.
Wedding.
Okay,
and,
great.
Sounds, I'd love if you guys came.
That sounds wonderful. I love the luxury hotel. How nice.
Yeah,
oh, wonderful.
Well, yeah, you'll get the save the date soon, and then you'll get the wedding invitation, and then I'll see you at the wedding.
Great. I'm totally open and free. Yeah. I don't know about you, Mo, but
great.
I think
I'm
ready.
I'm looking forward to knowing the wedding colors so I can just get on my shopping.
Yeah. The wedding colors are puke.
Oh, great.
So whatever that means to you, just
I love
vomit.
That.
Yeah.
The spirit of nuptials. That's just so nice.
It's a purge of our singularity, you know?
Oh, okay, great. Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody pukes. That's the universal truth. Yeah, that everybody does it at some point or another.
In a healthy way.
Oh, of course. I only puke healthy. I will say, seriously, I'm never offended when I'm not invited to a wedding. I don't know about y'all, but if my brother, it would be weird, but I was invited to that wedding. But I mean, it never bothers me. It's like it's a lot to ask of somebody. I'm always very touched when I'm invited, but I'm always fine when I'm not. I don't know.
I feel like, you know, there's some people who they're engaged and I get to be friends with them and the friendship happens really fast and really hot and heavy. And they're like, oh my God, you're totally coming to the wedding and all of this stuff. And then if I don't get invited to that, it's not that I feel left out or offended. I'm like, you wasted my time and you're a fake. You had me hang out and have to exert all of this emotion about our newfound friendship and about the excitement over you getting married, and then you don't invite me.
Ew. Yeah,
that hasn't happened, but it's
but it's good to be preemptively angry.
I feel I've been in those circles before, and drugs may or may not have been involved in my sin, but when people are always like, oh my God, you're the greatest ever, you've got to come to X, Y, and Z. But I don't know. It's not something that I just, it's sort of I'm always happy to when I can go, but it's just something that I had to, I don't know, gave up when I'm like, I get it. I think also it is a lot of money and and family is involved. So you don't know what's going on in people's minds when they're like, oh, we can have 20 people or 200 people. And or we have a family of, we have an insane number that we have to invite first and whatever. So you never know when people, what's going on in people's minds.
No, and it's also it's incredibly stressful. Yeah. I mean, if I'm not close with the person and I'm not invited, I don't, I understand.
Right.
I'm not even if I work with them or something like that, I'm like, well, we don't hang out.
Right.
We work together. It's fine.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if it was a close, you wouldn't be offended, a close friend.
I mean, I probably would. There's so many times that I feel like I've had I just get in the comedy world, you're where it's not a close friend, but it's somebody that I'm oh, we do a lot together, and I would consider that person a close friend, but I wouldn't expect to go to their wedding. But there would be a handful of people that it would be a little bit oh, that feels a loud and proud fuck you, but I get it, Yeah.
Yeah.
How long have y'all been married? You and Alex have been married.
We're actually coming up on our 10th anniversary.
Oh my God. Congrats.
Amazing.
It's weird. The wedding itself, we really just sort of count the 13 years that we've been together, to be honest. There was just that day that we had the big party,
Right.
Made it official and got married. But that's coming up in a month.
Oh, so, that's so cool.
Amazing.
And that was quick. So that was a quick 10 years.
I know. I feel like I've known y'all for at least 10 years. And I feel like I didn't know. Maybe I knew you before you were dating Alex.
You and I knew each other before. I don't know if I don't know if you knew Alex.
No, I definitely didn't know Alex until, but I just, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. And, but also I do think you've already decided when you meet the person, it's sort of the day is sort of, the party, but it's you've already made that commitment to, spend the rest of your life together.
Yeah. I mean, it is wild. How 10 years feels like yesterday.
It does. That was quick.
Post 18, or actually post like 22, it's like boom. But like leading up to that, it's like, oh,
the struggle.
You're like, this is taking so long.
Oh, life was so
get me the fuck out of this house.
100%. And I can remember things. I can tell you, like, maybe not month, but definitely season and year from my first 22 years of my life. And then the last 20, however many more, I have no clue. I'll say the other day, and I'm like, oh, that was 2008. I'm like, well, that wasn't that long. Oh, wait, that was 15 years ago, 2008? Oh, yes, no, fucking, no memory. I have no idea.
But time is no memory. We're halfway, we're almost halfway through, or are we like 2023? I mean, I'm still, you know, kind of writing out my New Year's resolutions for the year, you know?
Right. And then just like, and somebody just posted yesterday, like, if Back to the Future happened now, they would go back to 1993. And it's just sort of like that thing you're like, oh, wow. Yeah. I guess we're all.
Yeah. It's best not to like think about it too much, because I think it's like one of those things that, I mean, like anything that's age related, it's meant to, I think, I really do think it's meant to make us depressed and like
completely
and decrease our vitality in our lives. So I try not
well,
to
think yeah, of, it's like, you're either going to, it's, I mean, it's like a, you know, an older friend of me said, you know, it's like, you're either going to live to my age or you won't. And I'm happy to live to this age. And it's like, yeah, like just we can't avoid it. So it is, it's just, it's more like, it's just weird to think about when you think about like just how we mark things and time and achievements. And you're like, oh, wow, 10 years is a long time. You're like, well, it just depends on how you.
And you see like, yeah. And like relationships, like, I mean, going back to friends, like how many people I don't see at all anymore. And it was just like, it just sort of faded. And you just sort of went in these different directions as everybody became more established in themselves and in their lives.
Right.
And then there just wasn't room for each other for whatever reason, not in any hostile way. And then you go back, and then that's when like the last 10 years, I'm like, holy shit. No, I mean, a lot has happened in the last 10 years. That's crazy. You think about like jobs, you think about all these things that we've done, where while we're doing them, it seems like it's happening in a split second. But if you look back at it, the time makes sense. The time mm-hmm. makes sense.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people, though, as we get older, like I've noticed it's kind of frustrating that, you know, people don't want to still do as much, you know? And I find that frustrating. It's like, wow, God, I don't always want to be the one, you know.
Right. To like lead the charge, to be like, let's go to dinner. Let's go. Let's do the thing. Let's go.
And I know, and all the no's, I can't make it. And it's like, oh man, like, you know, life is short, y'all. Like we should just get together. Like we should get together, you know?
No.
Because
it just, it's really, some days I really feel like it's all just closing in, you know? Mm. An age, and time is going so rapid pace that it's like, it's very important to me right now to see my friends and my family and to reach out and be together and just, you know, get into each other.
Yeah.
Reminisce and talk about new stuff.
Oh, talk about new stuff is why I started doing this again, because I felt like I was so bored on my couch after 3 years of being like, I have no new thought. Like, I don't know what I feel about anything or care about it. And yeah, like, I feel like the great thing about with the pandemic is that like, I don't feel pressure to do things all the time. Cause I used to be like, stack my schedule, make myself so busy, do a show every night and go to another friend's show after that and go to it and schedule. And it would exhaust me. And now I'm like, no, I'm going to have a better relation. And so I went through a period where we all did, we did nothing. And now I agree, Mo. I'm like, I want to go back and have a balance with that and have a relationship. And if you're not feeling it, then don't do it and don't push, but also make an effort. You will feel better if you do it.
You do. And that's, you know, part of it is for me, because I still find myself a little bit. I mean, I firmly believe everybody has some level of PTSD after the pandemic.
Fully.
Politics and all of it. But it's like, so part of it is I need to make sure that I know how to go out in the world, you know, and like, and do things. So it may feel at times like I'm forcing that a little bit just to get my ass out there. But then I'm always happy I do. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm still there. I'm still there. I'm still here.
Yeah.
I think there's true PTSD associated with this business too. I just being in this business.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, whatever way that you are, like, cause it's like, if people are really busy or I'm really busy, it's, and they can't make it, I'm like, yeah, totally. Oh my God. Good for you. That's fucking awesome. But a lot of times people can't make it just cause like, they just can't.
Right.
And then that's the bummer. And you're like, oh, you're just like, because you, in a way, like, you need to be cocooned.
And I understand that too. I need to be cocooned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like a fear for myself, obviously.
Right.
Yeah,
it's totally. Like, I have empathy for that too, because like I say, on some level I have it, but I'm also doing contrary action to get myself out of it, you know?
Yeah.
But I empathize when somebody says, you know, just no, or makes up an excuse, and you know that they are, you can feel it or sense it, whatever. And you're like, God, I feel for them. And so you try and find, I don't know, other ways in, like try again, even it, because, you know, I worry about my friends that I really do see still fully isolated, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at a certain point too, it's like, I kind of, you know, some of those people I have to, when they're isolating like that, yeah, I have to just be like, well, I mean, call me when you've decided not.
Yeah,
to do
people
it
because... that are still not going out, and you know, and
yeah,
it's something that I try to be empathic and go, all right, there's some people who, I mean, I invite to show, like, I'm not going to theaters still, I'm not going to parties still or whatever, and you know, you try to be like, I get it, but also like, please do find a way to get help, because this is
real.
And this is something that there's no shame in having agoraphobia, but I do think that's what's happening at this level because we have to be able to go out. And then, but then also I would say, Brett, just, I would agree with like, you go, just, we are on top of each other, especially if you come up with like a group of people in the comedy world or an improv team or whatever. And everybody's so on top of each other. And then like, or you'll do a job and you work just maybe 2 days or a month and you get so close. And then people scatter and things. And then there's this level of insecurity when people get back together of like, and the people feel this, and you can feel it from certain people being like, well, I'm not doing anything. And then you feel the people's insecurity. And it's like, no, that's fine. How are you? Like, yeah. I miss you. It's good to see you. But I think people feel a pressure to talk about what they're doing.
No, there was that like element of like, there was that period of time where we all started, a lot of us started hanging out again, right? And going out.
Right.
It was like, oh yes, this feels great.
Right.
And then that sort of went away and you're like, oh wait, I really don't like half of these people.
Oh, I know.
I can't you come back tolerate and get... or like, oh, we're not friends anymore. We don't have anything in common anymore. No. Like there was all of that. And then that makes me like, when I get home, you know, with my beloved, I mean, I hate the word fiance, but like,
I always said fancy. I'm
proud of that, of being in that state, but like,
right.
That word is, we need, you know, I'm not the first person to say this, but like,
sure, yeah,
you know, and you get, and we get home and like our dogs are there and you're like, oh my God, you guys are the best. You guys somehow like do the same thing like so many times. And it's always interesting to me. Why don't I just hang out with you than be bummed out by this person who I feel like some historical obligation to, who just like showed me in 5 minutes how they're a threat to me progressing as a human being.
It's that balance. It's like, I feel like I'll spend the rest of my life trying to toggle between the two things, because, you know, and I do think that, you know, the older you get, you do have less friends, but they're hopefully better friends. Like that you've really curated the ones that like, you know, the people that holding onto those that like, you're good for each other. Cause I don't want to be around anybody that I'm bad for. If I'm not helping you out, if I'm bumming you out, then let me get away from you. I don't want to be like, you know, oh God, here comes Drew. And it's like, but I know there are people who all of a sudden I look, Brett Gellman left meeting. What happened?
No, I definitely like know that there are people who are like, he's a lot. I love him, but he's exhausting.
Same.
You know, like, yeah.
I think you just find that you find your people, but I also think that that they're the people who, like, you have to remember to reach out to a little bit more and go, oh, I really like that person and I don't hear from them and I am like, maybe they need a one-on-one thing. Maybe a big party is not their thing or whatever. It's also just a nice thing of like, I don't have to invite everybody. I mean, we come up from these giant, you know, these comedy, you know, all of us come from these big comedy theaters and you think like, I got to invite everybody I was on a team with in the, no, you don't. Like,
no.
You
just,
it's fine.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's like, as far as like those big lists, like that used to just keep for every party after party here at the house. And, you know, we've had a lot of big parties over the years and
you guys have great parties.
We do. Yeah. But it's like, it's just gotten to the point now too, where it's like, you know what, for the last, whatever, how many times these people didn't even respond. So I'm happily removing you from the list. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't invite me over. You don't get to just by rote be on this list, you know, and I'm so happy to kind of diminish it a bit to just the better people, you mm-hmm. know, people that you want to be around.
I'm in a real like, yeah, like friend, like transition here of like, oh, wow, not good for me. What's new? Hopefully, you know, these new things and like, hopefully they're something that, you know, develop into something actual, you know, that's real, you know, and that is that are, you know, long lasting friendships. I also just like, I'm like, no one ever calls me. I was just like, even like people I'm really close to, I'm always the first to reach out. And I'm like, that's just been driving me crazy lately.
Me too. I'm with you on that. That's what I was speaking to earlier. It's like, why is it always me? Like, call me, you know, it's a little frustrating.
And then some of those people will like guilt you right into not like calling them back. But I'm like, but I called you first and you took 2 weeks to call me back and I was busy.
Right. Exactly.
Like, at that point. That's right. The point where you got me where I was actually busy. Why don't you ever call me to check it? Like, that's the whole thing with like, I mean, this is so not to like, be like a Luddite here, but like just the whole fucking like talk on the phone, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
The texting and the DMing and the like communicating through like, I mean, if one more person comes up to me and is like, oh my God, I saw this on Instagram that you were doing, like who I've known for 20 years, I'm just going to be like, get the fuck away from me. Like, shut up. Like, yeah, what are you talking about? Like, you're not talking to me or like checking in or anything like that because
I've taken to 80s style, like calling people lately.
I love talking to people on the
phone. I don't, you know, I'll just in random, like out of the blue, you know, people I haven't talked to in, I don't know, 10 years.
I know. I love talking on the phone also. And I hate that when I see somebody that I haven't talked to a while calling me, I'm like, who died? Like, I think my first thought is, there's horrible. Why are you calling me?
Right. Yeah.
But I do hate when people text you and go, is now a good time to talk? Can we talk now? Can we talk in 5 minutes? Can I call? And I'm like, just call me.
Yeah.
And I'll call you back when I can, you know. But people say it a lot with me. They're like, thank you for like following through when we was like, let's get together. And I'll be like, yeah, like, when's a good time? All right, Wednesday at 5 or whatever. And people are like, thank you for actually. I'm like, oh, that's just the next step.
But the thing is, that is not the norm anymore. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, RSVPing, for example, you know, it's just like things like that. It's people, I don't know how this happened or why, but people seem to have lost just those basic sort of respectful things that you do where, you know, if somebody invites you to something or calls to go to dinner, whatever it is, and it's like, you know, they're trying to schedule something.
Right.
And it would be just really nice to know if you're a yes or a no. And by the way, maybe means no. You know, that's just a given. And anytime I get a maybe, I'm like, you come up with a new plan.
You know? I know. Like,
that's not happening.
I'm trying really hard to say no when I know I can't. When I think maybe I could do it, I'm like, maybe I don't know that I've ever shown up at something after I hit maybe. I try. It means I want to. But you're like, who cares? You can either make it or not. Like, just say, oh, and they're not counting on you. Yeah.
Right.
The worst part is, too, like, admittedly, like, all of this can, like, infect me. And then I start behaving that way. And I'm like, oh, your mom died. Oh, yeah, I should probably reach out to you, my friend.
Isn't it horrible?
25
you also,
years.
You don't
like 2 months
remember.
Later, like, oh, I still need to offer condolences on my old friend's mother dying. Like, I'm exaggerating. I don't think that that's happened. But like,
no.
Yeah, it's like a little, it's just like crazy. It's but is it worldwide or is it just in our community? Is it just in,
I think it's
like
worldwide
showbiz. Yeah.
I mean, people love to blame LA for that. I go, oh my God, LA. First of all, I have to say, and maybe it's because I have closer friends in LA, but every time I'm in New York, nobody flakes on me more. And now I have, I'm going to say 4 like dear friends in New York who are not these people. But aside from like my very close circle of friends, the amount of people that flake in New York City is far greater than people that flake on me in LA. That's just been my experience.
Amazing. That is stunning to hear.
And it's like, it's always the thing where like, oh, LA is so blah, blah, blah. And Hollywood, everyone's so fake. I'm like, some of the most successful people and the most Hollywood, you know, are the first people to get back to you. Busy people get back because they have a lot going on or they have somebody helping or whatever. But it's like, those are people that I go, why did that person get back to me?
Oh, I mean, that's part of the reason I moved out of New York after 10 years. I had like my social life and I was like hanging out with people like that were third tier friends because my first tier was like, I'm not going out. And like what happens to you if you live in New York to a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
not everybody, but to a lot of people, if they live in New York for a certain amount of time, they're like, I've done it. This is my thing. You know, this is my life's purpose to be a New Yorker, and that's all that I need to do. And I'm not.
Wow. I'm not going to leave my postage stamp like size tiny studio apartment that I pay $8,600 a
week. Isn't that so crazy? Like, that just seems the antithesis of being a New Yorker. Like, you live in one of the greatest cities in the world. And just like, how you're not just going and tapping into some of that is.
Right.
Yeah. Comedians and actors, though, very much this what we're talking about. I think that this infects them and us, you know, in a very high percentage.
Yeah.
Like more than like other fields.
Yeah. I think you're right with that. I mean, I love staying home. I love being home. I love staying home. You know, but that's also why I have to really, really make a point. You know, because I realized, especially learned it in pandemic, that, oh, I'm way more social creature than I actually thought. You know, that really revealed itself to me because I just thought, oh, I just, at first the pandemic is like, this is fantastic. Like,
oh, it was so great at first. And then
I just get to be at home.
Yeah. Well, because it's overwhelming for us because we see everything. We're creatures of, actors and comedians are creatures of observance, of observation.
Right.
And so we're like, we see everything. Whereas like other fields, they're like, it's me, the spotlight's on me. And with us, it's like, yes, the spotlight is on us, but it's also on everybody else. And we're seeing that very brightly. And it's affecting how we're functioning in the social space.
And the spotlight fades at a certain point. Like, you know, it's like you kind of get used to that. You're like, oh, it doesn't feel the same way. And then for other people who are like, this is my part. It's like Halloween, you know, New Year's Eve are like such huge things for people who aren't performers. But for us, I'm like, I have to wear a costume and do what? And walk around a party?
Like, I know. No,
there's not an audience. There's not a paycheck.
Yeah.
Oh, I need an idea for a costume. Like, that just seems so like work. But
I know. Yeah.
I'm happy to never go to one of those.
Well, a lot of times when I actually put the costume on and I take the drugs, I'm like, yes, great. Glad I did this. Childhood revisited, wonderful purity. Love it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, of course. Absolutely. No, it is. Yeah. No, I find sometimes
cleansing.
That I can be really not fun and I have to make myself get in the mood, bitch, and be like, fucking... Put on another wig. Are you have a problem wearing a wig, Drew Drogi? Oh, since fucking when? Get in there and have fun. And quit being like, I'm Ebenezer Scrooge and being like, I don't really want to fucking do this shit. But yeah.
Take the mushrooms. Take the
Molly. Take the mushrooms. Now that's the thing. Just
take the mushrooms.
Take the chocolate, honey.
Yeah.
Just enjoy.
Mushrooms, it's the one thing that like never lets you down. Every other substance is like, ugh, at a certain point.
I do have to say the very first time I did mushrooms, I did way too many. I ate them like potato chips and I had a very bad trip.
Yeah,
so I didn't do them for like 10 years. And I've since learned, just a bit. And then I love them. They're great.
Right.
I've never done the full blown experience, but I kind of want to, but like with a therapist, that kind of thing. But I do. Oh, okay. I microdose.
Yes. You enjoy those. Yeah.
That's what I'm. No, I don't love to like be in the stratosphere, you know, and be insane.
Have you done it though? Have you
been like nuts on it? Like out of my mind? Oh yeah. Several times. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I have a real curiosity about it, but I also terrifies me just because I know my brain.
I think at this point, if you know, I mean, I did acid like 5 years ago and I tripped really hard and I enjoyed it because I just knew that I think it's like with having had enough, I was old enough to know and experienced enough to know I'm coming back from this. This is wild. This is what this is. You know, I understood it more and felt, I mean, I, you know, feel more rooted in myself. Whereas like a lot of the time, bad trips, like when I was, you know, a teenager or in my 20s was like they had one lesson at the end when I finally came down, and that was I have a very low self-esteem.
Yes, same.
Came out of. Yes. I was like, oh, I really don't like myself.
You're in this business, but you had to do mushrooms to find that out?
No, I already knew that. It just was like, you're in the bad trip and you're going, why is this so bad? And why do I feel like I'm going to be put into a mental institution?
Yes.
Oh my God. Or you're not even asking why. You're just like, I'm off to the mental institution.
Oh, in my bad trip, I was like, I'm evil and someone needs to come over here and kill me. Like, who is going to come over and get rid of me? Because I'm fundamentally a bad person.
And then you come down and you're like, oh, nobody should kill me. But I obviously don't like myself.
Right.
And that's why I was thinking that and seeing those things.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that all just sounds like sobriety to me.
So go for it, Mo. Minor Revelations is supported by Scruff. So after you listen to the podcast, go on there and give your buddies a woof. Or, hey, do it now. I can't tell you what to do. Thanks, Scruff. I will say, I think also you have to be with somebody who can be like your guide, who says, it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you have fingers. Look at your fingers. And just like, you know, if you start to, and because once you have somebody being like, every thought you have is normal. And because mushrooms just bring out what's even more true about something that's happening. They don't make you see elephants in the room or whatever. It's more just like, well, you see everything. You see every pore on every flower and you see,
I know.
You start to really, and you will cry and laugh in like a baby. The last time I did them, my friend convinced me to go to a sound bath and I thought we were just going to listen to music on the floor. And next thing I knew, we were eating chocolate and I was out for 4 hours rolling around the ground. But I felt like how a baby changes emotions like so quickly. And I was seeing things and hearing things and laughing and then sobbing and scared and like turned on and like everything, every possible emotion was just going, was dancing across my face.
Yeah.
And you breathe. And then, but it was wonderful because it was like, be present with your emotions, be here. And like, you kind of were like, everything's fine. Like it opened things up and I loved it ultimately. And I never got so high that I was like, I'm freaking out. But if it's the first time, it's nice to have somebody with you going, that's fine. That's okay. And then your brain kind of relaxes and lets things go versus panicking.
You know, my son told me about how, like when he was like somewhere 19 or 20 and he did a big shroom scenario and he didn't have depression for 2 years or was it three, 2 or 3 years? Wow. Like it literally cured it for 2 to 3 years.
Like, yeah.
That's just exceptional.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they're saying about psilocybin, MDMA, LSD,
Did you see that documentary about the four separate, kind of, it's a four-part series. That's one was psilocybin.
I know what you're talking about, but I have not seen it. No,
I know what you're talking about.
That's the one that got me like, I need to do this. Like I want to eventually like get that therapist that's, you go to a room and just like do the thing and they guide you through it. And they're doing therapy with you during it.
Yeah.
I would like that. But otherwise it's, the microdosing is nice too.
Yeah.
It is nice. Yeah. To be just like, cause like marijuana just, I mean, really doesn't work for me anymore.
Me
like,
neither. It never did.
Really? Really?
It like, God, stopped. I wanted it to work. I smoked a lot last week. I mean, not like all day, but like, you know, at night. And I just like it, it definitely numbs me out. And just it like compacts the anxiety and depression so that like at a certain point I feel it's bubbling. It's, you know, and it's feeling bad. The next morning I'm like an anxious wreck and I'm like, oh my God, I got to just rip the Band-Aid off and go through like a few days at least of like utter hell to get through this and like get my bearings back off of what has just happened. And that's not like what it used to do.
Right. No, I love it. I love an edible, like to go to a show or something where I can like kind of zone out. I have to let people know I'm on drugs so that I'm fine. Like otherwise I go back to where I'm 15 and I'm like, they know I'm high and I can't tell them. Nobody cares, especially if you go buy it at the store. No one's going to go, ooh, bat. But once I do that, I do really enjoy it. I can't write on it. I can't perform on it. I can't work on it, but I love it when I'm kind of off and.
Yeah. I mean, I used to smoke and there was a certain point in my live comedy, you know, that I was doing where I was like, I was getting high before like every performance, you know?
Listen.
And yeah, I mean, there's certain performances that I don't remember, you know, like I, or like I have to be reminded of or things like that.
Right. And did that we, I have a feeling we maybe met during doing stand-up stuff. Now that I'm
maybe thinking, we might,
now
have,
that I'm looking at you and I'm like, and you're talking about that. I'm like, I feel like that's maybe where.
Yeah, that's possible.
Where we met. Yeah,
I'm sure you'll have over the years.
Yeah.
We do so many one-offs with people that you're kind of, or just, you know, ships passing. Yeah.
And it was, and you know, and there was like, you know, there were the comedians that you admire, you would see like light up before they would go on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh yeah. And it was also like, I was like never like building a set. I was always just like, this is my time as I pursue my acting and, you know, developing for myself as an actor career, you know?
Right.
This
right.
Like stand up's my time where I can just like let loose and do whatever. And then also just the frustration of the scene itself.
You would have to do like, something backstage like, with so many of those people.
Get me the fuck out of here. I mean, at a certain point, the comedy scene like becomes like your childhood home where you're like, oh my God, there's so many dark corners here.
Yes.
That like, you know, that I've created a lot, most of them, but like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
And, well, I admire y'all for doing stand-up because that was always my, just the backstage was as hard. I would do like storytelling, solo stuff like that, but stand-up world of everyone's out for themselves. And so you go backstage and it was hard. I had a really hard time like talking to people and people didn't really want to talk. And you're like, what do you do back here? And then you're like, I'm going to go watch people's stuff and then I'm in my head about what I'm gonna do. I don't know, like it was very
I mean the fucking false camaraderie, you know?
Oh,
the
God. Like, I know, and that,
I mean,
shit.
Just it's like none of you, like when you see like the group of guys, yeah, remember back, I'm like, look, you all got the switch off, all the only switch that's on is ambition and you're talking to each other because it's just something to do because you got to fill the time until you get back up there. So this whole like we're like a family, fuck that. It's such a lie. And it's been called out as being a lie.
I would just share something. This is something we only say among like small groups at the Groundlings, which it's like, yes, you have to be a lot more like you're improvising and building together as a team. And I obviously love most of the people over at that place. But the thing that cracks me up, and only a few of us talk about this, before every show, and this just started recently. This wasn't when I was coming up my first days at Groundlings, but everyone behind it, they all pat each other on the back and everyone says, got your back, got your back, got your back. And eventually it was the thing where we were going, no, you don't. You're going to go out there and get laughs you want to be the funniest one in the group, which is fine, but that like got your back. And it was like, what does that even mean? That doesn't mean anything. It's literally like when someone says bless you after you sneeze, it's like, it's the thing to do, but like no one really means bless you or like, I have your back. I'm out there. I mean, it'd be nice if you had my back, but I know you.
Yeah. We should just be like tapping each other's back and be like, good luck, because I'm out there too.
Good luck. Going rogue.
Good luck.
My show.
Good luck to you.
But then you work with like a real selfless actor. And then you're like, and they're like, yeah, you know, I just love doing this. So I'm just doing it. And you know, I'm doing like the minimal thing I need to do. That's the true thing here. And then you're like, yeah.
I know. Like the more you talk about it, the less I believe you, sir.
I just love storytelling.
I just love being part of this story. And, it, you know, it's just really great to share this space and play with you. You know, I just want to feel like whatever. You're like, oh, ew. I don't know that.
We're all mentally ill. Yeah. That's the thing. And if we all just like could just be like, yeah, look, we are all insane. We're all people who like we're like everyone should see me.
That's how everyone I start myself now. Like I start my brand. My brand, if you will, is as is. That is me. I am as is. No more trying to figure out who Mo Collins is.
Yeah.
I'm done with it. I am as is. And what that means some days is today is a good day. Tomorrow might be a bad day. Just, I don't know who, you know, when I book a show or something, it's like, I don't know who you're going to get, but I'll be really, really honest with you. From the moment I step out on stage, I'll just come out and say like, I'm fucking terrified. I feel really, my heart has come up and feel my heart. Like I just have decided to just be completely transparent, and I have so, it's just a better time. And, you know, and I feel like the audience has a better time too. Like we're kind of,
they want you in the room. They want you in the room and not really giving too much of a fuck about what you have planned. And I've learned that so much about like, oh, when you care less, you do better. And like, as is such a great thing to achieve, as opposed to I've got to win, you're gonna love me, I'm gonna whatever, and making excuses and whatever. No, I'm sorry about this. No, don't be sorry.
It's as is. It's like,
You
know, I know that, you know, people in the audience may be looking at my successes. They may be looking at why does she not have success now? Like their whatever judgments or things they have about, it's like, you know,
fuck them, fuck it all.
That shit can fuck you up. Yep. So I'm just like, you know what? I'm gonna get ahead of that, of all your preconceiveds, and just be like, this is, I'm here now. Then this is me now. And it is as is, neck and all, you know, just as is, because that way I can't fail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I already have history behind me that says, you know, I have a certain set of skills that will get me through the hour, hour and a half, whatever I'm doing. You know, it's like, but I mean, it's just so much better.
I put way too much pressure on myself, and I have to remind myself to be that, because it doesn't make you better. That's the thing. Like, we're not athletes in that way, that it's like work harder and get better. Right. It doesn't work like that. It's like, relax.
Yeah, there's no
bad. Dare to be bad versus like, I got to do good, because that's been like the hardest thing for me to.
It's always that balance. It's always that balance of like achieving that relaxation, but at the same time, not going into laziness, you know, or like, oh, fuck the audience, you know,
it's that. Absolutely not their fault. Not. Right.
Yeah. It's not that
balance.
Yeah. I mean, regardless, like they're going to get, you know, stage energy from me. But, you know, I really honestly just do not know when I go up, like what I'm going to fucking do.
I love that.
That's amazing.
I want to ask y'all about your, about some revelations. I just realized we're clicking on time. Do y'all have anybody want to go first? Something you want to share? Other than, I mean, this has been.
I guess I'm realizing now. I don't think I've ever voiced this, but I was like really into putting on like women's clothing when I was little. Putting on my women's clothing, and like my girl cousins like dressed me up in like one of their dresses one time. And I was like, this feels great. I love this. But it was also like, it felt like performance though, too.
Right.
And so, and like putting on a costume. I felt very comfortable, but it wasn't like, oh, this is me. But like, right. I loved it. You know,
I feel like the same thing.
Yeah.
Cause I've had to really do, I mean, just, you know, it's always interesting. I think it was like with gay people too, we also have to go, does this mean I want to live as a woman? Does I feel more comfortable as a woman? I'm like, I've had to like really do a lot of that inventory. I'm like, no, I was like such a late bloomer. All I wanted was like hair. I wanted a beard. I wanted to be a man so badly. But I also was like, I love playing women. Women are my favorite comedians growing up. I love putting that on. And I love when I put that on, I felt like funny and I felt like a different person. And then I liked taking it off. So it is connected to like the performer in you versus the like the person in you, which is like a, you know, something.
Yeah. It felt really funny. And then it also felt like fashion.
Yeah.
it was like, mm-hmm, yes. Like, yeah.
I love that.
This
I
is
love
good. It too. Rather than, yeah.
Yeah.
And then another one I had was today where I was like, I'm just so sick of like people acting like pimps, but they're driving Kias. I was just like, come on. I'm sorry. You're poor. Like, you don't like, and there's no shame in that, but don't act like you're rich. Like, you're this baller. Come on. Stop it. Don't blast that music out of your Kia. Like, you can't be doing that. You can't be doing that. It's just so annoying. It's so annoying.
I find that, like, I don't know, and I'm just behind the times, and I guess I'm just to say, like, I'm a Luddite now, but to me, comedy is like, I'm the joke. I'm inferior to you watching me. So here's how I am not rich, not successful. It's the Southern part of me, too, that's like, we're not doing too well. We like to act like you. If anything, you underplay things, but it's like art is now like, I'm the fucking shit. I'm the best. I'm amazing. How many comics now, these stand-up comics that are like young, who are very attractive, get up and talk about how hot they are? I'm like, what is funny about that? I get so
really?
Many, a lot of young stand-ups are like, I'm hot and I'm sexy and this is how, you know, and I, you know, oh my God, I'm fucking all the time and everybody wants to fuck me. And you're like, I mean, that's only funny if you're hideous. Like, it's only funny if you're the opposite of what you're saying, but because otherwise you're going, what? But I think it's something in
that's what like happened. That's what happened. Like, you're cool if the popular kids became like, that was the whole thing, is that we weren't popular, but then we became successful and artists and like bucked the system when we got older. But now, like, what it's meant to be, like, with, you know, I mean, I hate to be cliche here, but like, you know, with this fucking Kardashian culture, it's like, oh yeah, like, so what do? You're rich? Okay. Right. Like,
or like Dane Cook. I believe Dane Cook was popular in high school. So like, you know what I mean? It's like, I just use the example, whatever, and like say whatever, but like, it's like that vibe of like, oh, the guy that flicked your ear. I don't want to watch that person on stage do comedy now. Like, our ears were flicked, right? Like, who fucked with you to make you funny versus like everybody? I make everybody laugh all the time because I was popular.
Yeah, I know. And it's not.
I feel like with the younger generation of comics, it's their kind of new way, right? Like, there's a lot of new way going on out there. Mm-hmm. Times they are changing, and that's great.
Sure, absolutely.
But I think an element of that is that full on embracing of themselves, right?
Right.
And so that's going to come through no matter what they're doing, including, you know, stand up or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. that's going to be a part of their personality now, because now that's the thing. It's to be out, you know, just say, I like myself. I love myself, right? I think what I hate to say, that sometimes when I do see it, I kind of go, do you? You're, it's not reading, you know, mm-hmm. But fake it till
then
you
why
make
are you a comedian?
But fake it till you make it. Like, whatever is going to get you to that place where it's true that you love yourself, I'm all for that, you know,
for, yeah.
But, you know, it's like, I think that might be what you're talking about, Drew, that is just sort of, I think that's the younger way.
You also see it in the older generation too. You see it in our generation in terms of, like, you know, these cultural sages, you know, who we used to look upon to be the voices of truth are suddenly, like, you know, have really, they're like just continued to double down on, like, I'm the voice of truth and I'm the person that you should listen to.
Oh, I know.
When they're fucking insane. I mean, they're like incredibly flawed, it's crazy people.
It's co-opting the younger, it's co-opting younger generational things.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's the whole thing with Dave and the trans community.
100%.
Like, why are you going after, in this day and age, why are we going after them? Like, when there are plenty of great targets. And, like, I mean, that's also, like, a problem with, like, our whole side with the liberal, I assume, you know, us three are, side of, like, why are we, like, not that we shouldn't be going after our own for fucking up, you know, but why are we not going after the people who are, like, deliberately trying to destroy the world?
You know why? Because liberals are very good at eating themselves.
We are.
And that has been a problem.
And that's our problem.
Always been our problem.
It's been the problem for way too long. We eat our own.
We love to. And we love to always find out why we are all wrong amongst ourselves. Whereas the other side is always right. The other side is like, we align. Yes. We are this united force. We are all standing behind this one thing, this one messaging. And we go, well, I feel a little bit differently than you, Mo and Brett. I don't really agree, so we can't be the same. And so we immediately splinter off.
That's the bigger tent. That's what it gets us. Right. And that's the beauty of it, but it's also, unfortunately, too often it's sort of downfall, right? Like, because you, like you say, mine is, I see what you're saying, but it's also like, I like, mine is a little better, you know, and it's.
Yeah, and everybody like needs to give their take too, but then somehow like, it's their quest to find the middle in the take still, which then goes back to bigotry.
Completely.
It's like, okay, I got this. Here, let me talk about this bigoted view I have on women. But like, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to twist it. So like, you know, let's bring the bigots in so that they start to be like a little less bigoted. Let's trickle it in where it's like, you know, I follow this like George Carlin account on Instagram and I'm like, why? Where is this?
Yes, I know.
Where is this? Or I like, we'll see. I'll watch on like in another way. I'll watch like the best of Joan on Fashion Police. Mm-hmm. The best, you know, and I'll be like, this person got away and I really do think would get away. Ultimately, I mean, people would attack her, but ultimately would get away with all of this because she never claimed to be somebody that you should listen to.
And she made fun of herself.
Exactly.
Constantly. Yeah. And there was a sense of like, this is a character. But I also think too, like when people have like, they get a lot of money and a lot of success and they like live in these towers and they think, oh, comedy's dead now because I can't say this thing. And they feel like they have no more to learn. They double down on these positions and they think I'm going to be that versus going, because I love that Sarah Silverman goes on and basically like has changed her whole point of view about a lot of things, but I think she's one of the few people who needed to, because I've always understood where she was coming from and I never felt like she should apologize or needed to, but I love that she's now going, I did this and I shouldn't have and I was wrong, I'm learning, I'm growing.
Awesome. That's growing. Exactly. That's what it's supposed to be.
But the comics who should be are the people who should be going, oh, well, maybe I misspoke or I have something to learn, aren't. And it's like, well, it's like, okay, well, then go away. Thank you for your genius that you provide. Like Dave Chappelle, genius. Thank you for doing that. But if you're going to put 53% of your special about with trans jokes, I'm not going to watch that. And I can't be your fan anymore. It's just for me. Like, I'm not interested in that.
Exactly. And
it's like, just go, I was wrong. There's so much. I learned I don't have to have an opinion about everything, which is so new for me to admit that I can actually just shut up. I don't have to have an opinion every time something comes up that I'm not a part of. I can go, tell me. Yeah. And saying I'm wrong is so, it feels so good. It's a good cry. And go, oh my God, I was wrong.
I fuck up all the time.
Yeah.
I fuck up all the time.
All the time.
What human being doesn't fuck up all the time?
We all and like, do.
I like also am just like, an apology is the best case scenario when you say something that hurts someone or do something that hurts someone. But then if you say something that hurts somebody, at least just don't go there again.
Yeah.
At least just leave it in the dust and be like, okay, I'm going to go, like, I'm just going to move on. And that was a fucked up thing that I said that I, you know, was off on that I thought, you know, I don't like think that a lot of people are like getting on stage and being like, I'm going to fucking hurt somebody today. They're like, they are thinking it's my right to be funny on my terms. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And or are like any of us that we relate to want it to be good or like are improvising something off the cuff, even if you're getting or like you have that talent like to be in the moment, even if you're getting paid like $20 million and it's a room of thousands of people, like you're that good that you can in that situation, you know, do some really amazing material, but like, you know, and you got a fucking editor, so who cares, you know? And so it's like, you're maybe going to say something that is wrong, you know, just like, yeah, and not double down on it. Like this doubling down is just and this like cause, it's just so lame. I was like, wait, have comedians become the most butthurt people of all time? Like, it's like we're just like, you can't tell me what to say. Like, you hurt that person's feelings.
You know, part of the job too is, you know, the only way to know where the line is to cross it.
Is it?
You know, that's literally how you find out where the line is. But you bring up a really good point. You know, these people doing shows and there's an edit. They can edit, you know, and it's like our audience is the dictator of the line,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we can listen to that and learn from that and should. But I
absolutely
do believe that the conversation, if I think the conversation is the most important part of any of it, because that is the way through this shit, no matter mm-hmm. who you are and who you're talking
yeah.
to, that is the only way through, is that we know there's an avenue for conversation. And so we may hate seeing people do shit like that, but at the same time, look, here we are talking about it. And the conversation is the thing that will help ultimately propel things forward. But
yeah,
there's an edit button. There's an edit button.
It's also recognizing that, like, even though you're on this side, that you still have bigotries in you that are ingrained,
yes.
and you're conditioned, and you have insecurities that you're not in touch with that are going to make you say some of these things. Like, it's like to do this thing of that we're perfect, and yeah. so it
oh,
makes
God,
everybody
please
annoying.
Don't set us up for that. Don't anybody, please.
I mean, it makes the comedian, it makes the performer annoying because they're like, I should be able to say whatever I want. And it makes the audience and the critic annoying because they're like, you should really watch everything you say. Like, everybody's annoying.
And like, is anybody laughing? Was there a joke there? Or was it just like, I went there? Oh, no, you went there. You can't go there. No, but I'm going to go there. It's like,
oh, man, I hate like seeing this trend with like so many, like, you know, with that ilk of comedian where they're like, they literally are going, ooh, I'm like, what a crutch, because the thing wasn't funny. I mean, that's the thing, is like, it really just isn't funny. Like, there's plenty of like really offensive stuff that all three of us, I'm sure, have laughed our asses off that wasn't okay, but like, it was funny, you know, for some reason, because it is this unexplained thing. That is the other thing that is like where our culture is, like, everybody thinks that you can intellectualize and nail everything down to the intellectually understandable, when really most things that you're experiencing, especially in art, are hitting you on a much more visceral level
mm-hmm.
that you don't understand at all, and that you might not understand for like 5 years after
right.
you experience it.
I have a hard time with today, the, you know, and probably this has always been this way, but no, it's way more now. I really grieve the loss of people's critical thinking when it comes to context. of things.
I know.
Yes. 100%.
I grieve it because it is one of those things that will stop a comedian from saying well thought out ideas, you know? But a person will hear one word in it and it's a trigger word and there it goes. And it's just like, we have just got to tap back in to context, please. But, you know, everything is, it's like, do we have to start teaching that now? Like context of things.
Yeah, nuance
case, and context.
Case by case, the reality of life, of art, yes, is a case by case basis.
Yeah, and the person and where they've come from, the intention is so huge.
100%. And it's something that I used to feel like was so much more instinctual. Like we just would know it and go, well, I know where you're coming. And now it's this weird thing of like, you have to explain where you're coming from to people who are like, you can't say that. You can't.
That's the new generation coming in. And so it's like, I feel like there needs to be more of a learning curve for the upper generations to catch on. It can't just be this immediate, shut up, older people.
Right.
Don't say that anymore. And it's like, hang on, please understand why I said it. And you know, that for me, it doesn't, and here's why it wasn't for me, but help me learn and change. And, you know, that's where it is. It's like that context and the nuance. It's like, let's just not just jump to no, you know,
right.
Like, we can't, that gets us nowhere. It squelches the playground so much. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but like, certainly with like the improv world and everything started maybe more than 10 years ago, that it just, the playground changed so much that I actually left it for a while just because it was like, it's not my playground anymore.
It's hard teaching. I teach every now and then. I go back and they're so scared. I mean, like I have so few like students who are like, I'm going to go there. I'm going to do that. I tell them, I go here, we're in a classroom. This is where you fail. This is where you can actually say the thing. We go, okay, here's why it's problematic when you say this or make this move. And we all have built in trust with each other and you're not on Twitter. You're not in front of an audience. You're not in front of, but they're so scared. I had a group of women who were like space working, chopping up a cow in a scene. And we were all laughing. It was ridiculous. And afterwards, one of them was like, I just need to tell the class that I eat meat, but I really hope I didn't offend any vegans in the class. And we were like, I said, no one's allowed to be offended by that. Like, we chopped up an imaginary cow and on like, that's like children's theater. Is anybody going to be like, I'm sorry that I think the slaughter of animals is wrong. It's like, okay, fine. But that's not like,
but this is improv.
Right. But she was so scared that she had like crossed a line and it's like, yeah, oh my God, where do we start? It's like, I'm like, oh my God, I wish you would be worse at times. And it's like,
yeah. But that is the younger generation. That's how it is for them.
Yeah.
And that's real.
Yes. Yes.
It makes me very sad for them because I just go, I don't know how you build self-confidence coming up in that. Because I know for my own experience as a woman coming up, you know, with men in comedy and everything, man, if I didn't get bent over and all the shit that has happened to me, I tell you what, like, that built my confidence and those were my brothers. I trusted these people and that was mm-hmm. the difference. The playground was the safe place. And so, you know, and we gave it to each other and that's the way it was then. And that made me a confident woman.
Well, this is why we really, you know, hey, like, I think the answer here is that, you know, where do we go from here? And it's that we've been given an opportunity to be more conscious, you know, and if you're going to be provocative, to be more conscious of how you're being provocative, that you're covering these bases, you're presenting a human flaw, you're doing it to make people laugh and not to alienate people. You're doing it to free people. And you're also like, I mean, when I just did like my first like live show a week ago, and I don't know, it's like I'm on your side, I'm gonna be like filthy and fucked up here, I'm on your side, but I'm also a devil. And then like, why wouldn't you want to see why would you want to see a saint here right now?
Course.
But that is not dramatically or comedically interesting.
Isn't it funny how everything to, it's like the setup before you get to your jokes is actually a disclaimer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like how, like, yeah. Are we supposed to talk about like how we're just together people all the time, and then like just be like, I don't like this when this person does this.
No,
it's like,
I know I write a lot. I have all the like terrible gay people theater that I write, like plays of just terrible gay people in them, and I get the question from gay people like, "Do you not like gay people?" And I'm like, "Oh no, wow. I hate that question. I love gay people, but I don't want to write it." Play about my friends and I watching movies on a couch in Palm Springs drinking wine. That's not interesting. Like, who gives a shit?
A lot of these people who jump on all of this, they're fucking hobbyists. Okay, they don't want to admit that they are the audience. It's like it's you know social media has given everybody this illusion that they are the performer, that they are equal to the performers in terms of doing this. And they're not.
No.
You are the audience, and be happy with being the audience. But if you want to do this, then fucking do it and put yourself on the line, or else shut the fuck up.
Unless exactly. Or say you know something what?
Truly you problematic.
Leave. Like, you can leave the theater. You can go. Mm-hmm. You can, if it's just one comedy, he's got 10 minutes, go fucking step outside for 10 minutes. But, you know, it's the one bad apple, theory that just sort of pervades way too much and just like destroys it for everybody.
Yeah,
I know. Well, that's the thing, because it's like it's both sides. It's like I'm not gonna like cry cancel culture, because there are comedians who you're like, dude, like your level of influence is gigantic,
right?
And you did something, and you're not thinking this through and how you're addressing it, like, and rather you're behaving like a petulant child.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, but like, that's the cost of your fame and influence now, that you need to actually be accountable for what you say. That's the thing you bought. Mm-hmm. And so do that, or else just don't go to that area again and leave it alone, and people can get upset with it. Pull the fucking Eddie Murphy and just don't address it ever again.
Hello. Yeah. Watch Raw, which I mean, you can't now. You're like, what? It's like, yeah.
But like, we all still love, I still love Eddie Murphy.
Of course, because same.
Eddie Murphy, like, okay, I don't know the place Eddie Murphy was in when he did that show. He might have been like in a horrible mental state, and that might have been what made him say those things, you know?
Context.
He's not trying to do Raw again.
No.
You know?
I would love to see.
Yeah.
I mean, same look. Set. Raw and Delirious, half of both of those performances are complete, you know, the funniest thing of all time. But like, the other half is like crazy homophobia and
unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
But like, he also, though, I don't know, was meaning to be an attack on women or the gay community. You know, he just was like... not thinking, you know, because he didn't have to. And now, and now we have to, and we should have to.
But those were also the days more of shock, right? Like that was more of, it was almost like a style that shocked. Yeah. Like if you weren't shocking, then are you any good? you know?
Right.
Or that Andrew Dice Clay was a character, like love it or hate it. It was a character that guy was doing, and he, you know, and it was like a different, and now you're like, We don't do that now, because it's a different world now. But it's
was also, though, like, in what context too? Because if you listen to The Day the Laughter Died, as offensive as that is, it somehow works better than his arena shows as a comedic piece, because it's in Dangerfields and like it's all obviously improvised and nobody's laughing, and it's so funny to me, because it's like, it's literally like some like total crazy villain like got on stage and is having a nervous breakdown. I don't know if that was his intention, but that's how it comes off to me,
right?
And I mean, like, I don't even know like what I've said in this podcast. I might have said something like not okay in this podcast.
You're canceled. We're all canceled now, for sure.
I've been offended the entire time. I've been tweeting about you this entire time.
No, but my point is like, I could easily go back into this podcast and I'm sure find something I said where I'm like, I didn't mean that. Oh, that was stupid. Or like, that was like problematic. And like, we should have the freedom as you've said, to like have the conversation around that so we can all grow together. I mean, somebody said to me when Trump first became president, I was at this film festival, and like this guy I met who was like sort of like, you know, bringing me around and stuff like that was like, he was like, you know, it's the age of Aquarius. I was so bummed out over this, you know, that this was happening. And he was like, you know, it's the age of Aquarius though, right? And he's like, we're set to evolve now. And I was like, I really actually think that we have, and we just don't know. And we haven't taken the responsibility to do that and progress in the right way. I think we're all still figuring it out, you know, as a race. And sure, that's why things are so fucked up, because we're hanging on to these old things rather than progressing to new ways of doing things. And that doesn't mean becoming Buddha or a saint. That just means taking stock of like in a visceral way, not even in an intellectual way, of what's going on.
Well, that's exactly, that's the PTSD I talk about. It's like we've been spinning, and it's just on a daily basis, like with social media and everything, no time to really understand that we have been traumatized, just traumatized. And some people are still in shock. So, you know, there's anger, there's all the levels of grief because of who we used to be, or, you know, it's like, we need to diagnose ourselves and get the fuck in a chair and get talking and healing.
Yes.
You know, like, because this has just been too much.
I know.
Age of Aquarius is a
motherfucker. Aquarius. It's also like, you know, we don't know how long we'll be in that age, and we're in the process of, like, were we in puberty right now? And it's like, because there's really exciting stuff happening, I think, just in, like, we just see things differently. And one thing I love about the kids is that they see things. They just like, oh, well, those aren't the rules. Or who care what the rules are? Well, we're doing it this way now. Yeah. And part of me is like, great. Like, we fucked it up. So tell it. Like, you know, that's.
Really?
Yeah.
So, I have so much faith in Gen Z. Like, I'm telling you, like, I am so excited about Gen Z.
Yeah.
You know?
No, they're definitely, like, going to save the world. Hello. There's no question about it. Yeah. But, like.
We've given them no choice.
But they, you know, they're also, you know, I mean, like, to like retrack on it, like, or like sort of like maybe flip flop on some things I said, like, that's their flaws, their generation that they go too far with. But in the more moderate version, that's very good in order to educate everybody to be more empathetic and more humane.
Yeah.
And I hope it didn't come across that I'm excusing misogyny and homophobia in people's acts.
Oh, God, no, not at all.
No.
Not at all.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
No, it's conversation. We're having a conversation.
Yeah. Mo, I want to hear. Mo, do you have any revelations? We're almost out of time. I want to make sure we hear from you.
Oh, okay. Well, then, real quick. Yeah. And this is just sort of, I've really noticed this of late in my life. I have a really different relationship with food than I ever thought I did, and I have to have easy food to eat. I don't want my food has to be easy.
Crab legs or
it goes beyond that. I'm talking about like easy bite-sized food. I don't want to bite into an apple. In fact, like if Alex sees me grab an apple, I also grab a paring knife and he goes, oh, you going camping? Because I sit with the like a camper and I cut small pieces. It's like a lot of this goes back to during pandemic, I had a hellish dental scenario where I lost a tooth because a dentist fucked up, and it ended up having a three-part tooth scenario with two that looked like shark and then a missing tooth, and I had a temporary in. And just before the pandemic, I went to a Walking Dead convention, you know, where all weekend you were just taking pictures and talking to the fans, and it was full-on actor's nightmare. I bit into a sandwich, just a tuna sandwich, just a soft tuna sandwich. And the temporary came out, and I spent the rest of the weekend with my tongue holding in. How are you?
Oh, like, my God.
And taking picture after, like, and this was in Georgia. So awful. It wasn't even like I was home, could go to the dentist. I mean, so I just have a thing like, but it also goes like, I don't want my lettuce flying up and putting stuff on my face. I don't want messy food. I don't want it to be difficult, but it also forever I've had the thing where I don't like to eat like a sandwich in the car. Like if you go to the drive-thru or something, and I haven't done that in a long time. I mean, other than a fish fillet, but I'll do it for
half.
Yeah,
I don't eat meat anymore, but in the day, there was something. There was a compulsion.
You love a fish fillet?
That happens where if I'm in the car and I start eating, I feel like a pig, and so I will lean into that, and just start literally like making the being breathy and just like, yeah, you're a fucking pig eating in the car.
Oh yeah.
Like, and I have to get it in as fast as I can. I don't do that anymore because wow. I don't like to be that pig. But lately in the last few years, it's really turned it like I could honest, if I'm being real, I'd be happy to just buy baby food from here on out and just little tiny spoons and just real easy little bites.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Don't bring me a hard roll sandwich. I don't want it.
I love it. But that's very,
right.
You know, very safe. Very safe. Yeah. Very, I mean, and I'll say like somewhat like it feels like a little aristocratic.
I'll take it because I'm otherwise white trash. So it doesn't actually make sense to a lot of my sort of blue collar personality. It's like, what is this, Lady Collins? You know, right. It's like, but yeah, I just, mm-hmm. I think it lately it really stems from the tooth issue that I had where it's
that's like, definitely because I lost my teeth when I was like 9. They had just come in, my new teeth, and I broke them. I fell and broke both my first front two teeth. These are my front two teeth are fake. And I don't bite into anything since I was 9 years. I don't bite apples. I can't. I will bite underbite it and grab it. But the instinct to do that is so, because I had Timbers and I sneezed them out one time in the grocery store in college.
Oh yeah.
It's and terrifying. I was like, you know, it's terrifying.
Drew, isn't it absolutely? I had no idea it would be such a thing, but when they held up the mirror for me after they took out my tooth to see myself like that, it was on a very deep chemical level altered me. Like it was so not okay on a foundational level. You know, it's like, cause your smile is your thing, right? And I really did go through a few years there. It's like, I was afraid to smile even because it's like, it's a temporary and, you know, and that bummed me out because I always liked my smile, you know?
You have a great smile and I would never know that the teeth you have are different from the one.
Yeah, it's fake.
Fucking crazy.
I would never know either any fake teeth. Ever.
But it's a thing. But yeah, I just like clean, easy food, like a nice grape. Oh God, I love a good grape. Really simple.
Uh-huh.
I think that we really don't like take into account like just, I mean, the mouth is like really a big deal. It is really a big deal. Like, I mean, you can get like serious, God forbid, serious diseases from having like problems
in your
mouth.
One of the easiest ways to have a heart attack is if you have like an infected tooth and go right to your bloodstream. Yeah.
I was afraid of that too.
Yeah.
So it's like, I bet your body and your psyche knows like this is very important. So if like something fucked up happens with your mouth, you go into some, you know, your subconscious is probably like, oh no.
It's bad. Know? And it's still not great. Like there's still a level of fear.
Yeah.
Well, I pray for your healing.
The age of Aquarius, it's gonna change. Your teeth are gonna.
We're
evolve.
All, yeah, we are. We're in the process of healing.
No, I love it.
Yeah, now I actually want to read it.
It's amazing. I'm an Aquarius, so I'm a narcissist. So I love when I hear age of Aquarius. I'm like, I'm all ears.
Yeah, I found that interesting though, because around that time, that's when like the Me Too movement happened, and like you know, and when. Yeah, I mean, if you think about, like, you know, the protests,
right.
You know, the BLM protests, and you think about, you know.
Well, and just that we're seeing, like, multiple genders now, and we're learning the pronoun, you telling people they, them, and that's a huge thing. I mean, that's identity
that's all happened in the last
that's
few
big.
Years.
And then you look
that's
back incredible. And, like, oh, no, other cultures have been doing this forever. We've just been behind, like. You know, there are these like ancient indigenous cultures that have five or six genders the way they see it. And you're like, that what? Like all that, just like that is mind blowing.
You know, one of my favorite things I learned, and it's from Lakota Man on social media, an indigenous man.
Yes.
And he schooled me on, and I just love this, trans people are two spirit.
Yes.
And they're revered. because of that.
Like, they're like sages.
They
like,
are, because they come from both aspects of it. Like, I just think that's how it's just so logical.
Well, and I was just in Rome, and there were some preachers that had both genders in them, and that was the thing. They were in between, and understood and empathized all sides, and it's part of it. And like, oh wow, so look at this sculpture from 600.
I know, it's not AD. New. It's just politically new that it's a problem.
It's just they're all afraid that they're all in communities that are afraid that they themselves are queer and will be ostracized for it.
Or it's also, I think it's also white supremacy, where they're like, they're gonna be less of us, and they don't even realize that that's what that is. But it's like, we've always been the majority. I love the threat was like, you know what, pretty soon white people aren't going to be the majority. It's like,
oh, no.
Why would that be a problem? Unless who cares?
My favorite thing growing up, like in elementary school, was the mixed salad of the country, right? That's how it was explained. Like, we're a salad. Right. We're just, you know, when it was like World Culture Week or something, right? Like, there was always that week. And I got to bring in that I was Irish, and everybody brought all this stuff. And melting pot.
Yeah.
The melting pot was one of the most exciting things I ever learned. I just love that, because it's like, wait, can I taste your culture? You know, I love that. I love that. I'm still going to be mine, but I would love to taste your culture.
It's just, absolutely. I mean, I grew up wanting to be other things than I was a lot of times. I mean, like, I mean, I don't think that I'm trans, but like, you know, but putting dresses on when I was little, there is like something about like, being a woman in that moment, you know, I'm wearing something that I associate with being a woman.
I love playing men. It hasn't happened enough, but I love
playing. Yeah. Well, exactly. I was like, there's also things where like, I don't know what's at play sometimes with me when I'm like interested in something. I'm like, what part of me is that? But how exciting to learn about ourselves versus to be afraid of that shit and be like, no, that's not me.
Like, it's not you, it's them. They're talking about them. They're not talking about you. So why do you have a fucking problem with it?
Yeah.
Find your own business. Like,
it makes me crazy. Nobody's coming for your goddamn piece of pie.
They're trying to live themselves. Everybody's just trying to.
That's all.
The disenfranchised people of the world.
I mean, you tout freedom all the time. Why don't you want it for other people?
How about that? Or just have your freedom.
Be a jackhole. Be a fucking jackhole.
Yeah.
You know? But don't hurt other people. Don't be, you know.
Yeah.
But
you kill yourself, it's okay too.
Yeah, exactly.
I won't miss you.
All right. We're running out of time. I love it. Oh my God, I love this conversation. I feel like I loved it.
That was great.
That was so fun.
I want to thank Mo Collins and Brett Gelman for being on the show today. Where can we find y'all on the social medias?
Brett Gelman, at Brett Gelman on all, you know.
On the big three.
On the big three. On IG, TikTok, and Twitter. LinkedIn, I think, is my handle.
Mine's so stupid.
No, I can't.
I can't either. I don't know how I got on, and I can't get off.
How to get off LinkedIn?
my Instagram is @Mo_Collins, and which is so ridiculous. And then Twitter, because this is the thing, there were other Mo Collins already. The Mo Collins on Twitter.
Awesome.
And I'm on the TikTok too. But
he's on the TikTok.
I am too, but I don't even know what I don't do it. So.
I have to get on it, like. Now I might, by the time this podcast episode airs, I might be on it mainly for this show, but I'm like, I gotta join the thing that I should have done 10 years ago. But
I mean, it's kind of fun, but it's also horrible. Right. I mean, you know, like, you know, it's all like, ugh. And I'm like, should I be on this at all? I think some people do, but
they look at that shit.
They love it. They watch it and they, you know,
but I mean, even the industry casting and stuff, like, keep hearing that more and more from casting. So I'm like, crap.
I know, but who are those casting directors and what are they casting? You know what I mean? It's always like,
honey, I don't know any. I've had one audition this year, so I could not tell you jack shit about the.
I know.
Yeah.
Same.
No, we
I
don't
may
know.
Be done. Like, I think Hollywood quit.
I said the other day, I was like, I feel like I maybe was retired and they didn't tell me yet. They're like, oh yeah, thank you for your time.
Let's get this, guys.
Let's do it, guys.
Let's get it.
Thanks, right. Y'all.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Friend of the Pod Productions.